This is a View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Thursday, the 9th of April, 2015, and my name is Patrick Smith. Contrary to popular belief, it hasn't taken me until today to sober up from the playoffs. I just had to change some internet service provider, and that is the story I'm sticking to. We've got a great show coming up for you. Craig Somerton, Coventry Blades fan, coming to chat to the coach about his weekend. No doubt a very happy man after the Coventry Blades took the playoff title this year. We'll be looking back at that weekend, the games against the Blaze, the whole Stingrays, looking across the league, a lot of signings going on, looking at that final, and a few other bits and pieces besides. A lot of places you can get us, as always, at AVFTB, podcast at kingdomofthegiants.com, www.kingdomofthegiants.com/AVFTB. No, that's wrong. /podcast. Thank goodness this is the last show of the season. And soundcloud.com/AVFTB for all of our post-game interviews. I've stumbled over enough. It's been very fun to do this season at times. It's been very difficult to do at times, but we still enjoy doing it, so cue the music. Well, it's the last of you from the bridge of the season, and well, in many seasons past, we've been lots of positive stuff to chat about. Maybe this week we'll be reflecting on a mixture of a season. I'll start off by congratulating the Coventry Blaze, who are the 2015 Elite League playoff champions, and we're going to take you right through the weekend with David McGimsey.
Evening, Patrick.
How are you, sir?
Evening, Coach. I'm not bad, mate. Not
and
bad.
TV's Neil, the Coach Russell. How are you, mate?
Evening, Patrick. Evening, David.
Well, we'll just start, will we, boys? Saturday against the Coventry Blaze, the playoff semi-finals, the Belfast Giants were subject to a 3-2 shootout loss. The Giants' goals coming from Mason and Sawada, was the Blaze goals coming from Da Costa and Tendler. And it was Ben Arndt who scored the decisive goal after 70 minutes of hockey. And Davey, we went into the weekend with so much optimism, and that game was really a microcosm of our season.
Yeah, it was. Very, very, very disappointing, Paddy. Obviously, for the season to end the way it did, it was a kind of almost written before the game that that was the way it was going to end. You know, we came out, I believe we came out pretty well. We took the body, we played well, we got the go-ahead goal, we did a lot of things right, we used a big ice, we did. And then I think we commented to each other after maybe about 5 minutes or 10 minutes of the second period, we'd stop playing the body, we'd stop playing that aggressive Giant style of hockey, and we'd just let them come on to us, and like we hammered them out of sight on the goal count. And the same thing, we couldn't put the puck in the net, and we weren't creating like clinical goal scoring opportunities, and it just has been the way the season has gone. I'm sure those players were desolate about it on Saturday night, you know. It's very, very hard to even critique, Paddy, because we just did the same things we've done all season long.
Coach, the Giants had to come out quick. They had to hit hard. And the fact is, Mason scored, and it was looked like the Giants were going to, you know, take that one goal lead and push forward. But it took around 30 seconds for the Blaze to score again. Not that the actual game stopped. The shot went right through the net, and it took a review before it was called 1-1.
Yeah, listen, I agree with Davey there in terms of, and yourself, in terms of our start in that game. I mean, how many times have we said it over the last few years, and especially this season, of the importance of coming out of the traps really early? And, you know, I think Davey's the one that's talked about it extensively this season. You know, we get that go-ahead goal, we more times than not end up winning the game, but we majorly took the foot off the gas in that second period. We our overall level of intensity, our fast skating, our physicality just completely dropped away in that second period. And listen, you have it written down there perfectly, Paddy, and on the agenda. That game is just a microcosm of our season. I mean, we We saw how bloody good we were the previous weekend against the Cardiff Devils. We were physical. We were in their faces. We were tape-to-tape passing. We were throwing the puck on goal. We had guys crashing the net for those rebounds, going to the dirty areas. All the cliches, all the hockey cliches that keep getting rhymed out. But, you know, how many times have we said it? You put the puck on goal, crash the net, good things do happen. And our overall level of that intensity just dropped away as the game went along, and it was just so disappointing to see it kind of pan out that way.
Davey, the Giants came back into it, got that go-ahead goal again through Sawada, who over the course of the playoffs, him and Chevrolet have been absolutely fantastic for the Giants. We spoke about it a few times, even into the run into the playoffs, and they got that go-ahead goal, which the Giants held into the third period. But again, slow out of the traps in the third, Tendler gets that leveler and it takes it all the way to overtime.
I'd say this is, in the intermission, you know, if we get the third goal here, I was confident and I would go back in time. I think if we got that third goal, we could have set up our trap. We'd have won that game. I think on the balance of things, we were the better team overall in the game, chance-wise. Stewart had to make more big saves than Chewback had to make, but we can't at the minute. It's done now. We haven't been able to over the last number of months force that extra goal, force that goal when we needed it, and, you know, not go back to the microcosm of the season, but that has been our problem, is getting that go-ahead goal and keeping it. And, yeah, Stewart was the hero for them, but I don't think he was exceptional. You know, he made half a dozen pretty good saves, but he didn't, you know, he didn't stand on his head to win that game for them.
Well, that's it. Coach, you know, in the interview post-game with Chuck Weber, chatting to him as well, the fact that defensively they had to be sound. It starts with Stewart at the back for them, and then they've got to rely on basically a five-man defence, pushing shots to the outside and letting Stewart see everything that's coming his way. He's a big unit. He's a very good player, but he saw everything that was coming his way and he was able to deal with it.
Yeah, you know, we've heard it talked a lot this season. And again, I think Davey is the one that has mentioned it the most, talking about, you know, we've outshot the opposition by 15 shots, you know, over the course of the game or whatever. But you're quite right. Coventry Blaze are a team that know how good a goaltender they have, and they keep the opposition to the perimeter. And as long as the goaltender, as long as the likes of Brian Stewart can see that puck from distance or wherever, he's going to save it more times than not. He's a huge, huge body to try and get past. And, you know, Coventry aren't the most sexy team to watch. Far from it. Though they were very good in the final, in fairness to them. But overall, like their overall level of offense and what have you, isn't great to watch. There's no kind of silky, smooth Chris Higgins-type players and what have you, or Mike Compton-type players. But, you know, defensively, they're absolutely superb. You know, I thought what do you call the former Cardiff Devil? Smith?
Yeah.
I thought he was absolutely superb for them at the weekend, as was Jim Jorgensen as well, as was Mike Egner. Just defensively very sound. You can see the way that Chuck Weber has got those guys set up now. He's got them drilled to within an inch of their lives, and just shows you what, you know, how good a coach Chuck Weber is and how he's actually turned that team around. And fair play to the Coventry Blaze, but I just felt again that we kind of were part to play in our own downfall, because we kind of took the foot off the gas and didn't play to our overall level of ability or our overall capability in terms of physicality either.
I'll start with you in this question, Davey, and then I'll go to Coach. The impact player over the last couple of games with regards to the Cardiff Devils, especially in that first one, was Kevin Westgarth. Now, Kevin Westgarth dressed for the game, and he stood on the bench for all 70 minutes and the shootout. He never saw the ice except in the period breaks. Why do you think that was?
It's a very difficult question to answer, Paddy, because in the home game against Cardiff, we ended up, it was a 1-0 one, am I right?
Yeah.
I'm saying, yeah. And he kind of came on and closed the game down for us. You know, he put Cardiff on the back foot a bit, and we closed the game out on the back of his physical play. But he didn't really play on the Sunday in Cardiff when we've ran seven past him. So I think it's a, you know, why didn't he play on Sunday or on Saturday? Sorry, I don't know. I think there was a case for a couple of physical shifts in that second period when we took the foot off the gas, somebody to go out there and spark it up again. Because coach will tell you, you know, in any sport, once you take your foot off the gas, it's very, very hard to get it back on again. And in hockey, they talk about
momentum swings when there's a fight or there's a big physical hit. That gives the team a wee kickstart again. There's an argument, you know, Garce, take a shift off, Loiter, whoever, take a shift out there, Westgaard, go out and try and bring something, try and get this game going. Because once we took the foot off the gas and we went in the third period, 24 shots to 10 ahead of them, whatever, and we didn't have the foot back on the gas, once they got a goal, we deflated completely. And it was almost tippy-tappy hockey late in the game. Blaze were happy to see that game through and take their chances in the penalty shootout on what they believe. Coach already said, you know, they have big, big faith in their goalie. They were happy to take it, their penalty shots, and see, you know, see what way the cards fell for them.
But Coach, you know, Kevin Westgarth comes from a line where he doesn't play much ice time. He doesn't get out on the ice very much. He's used to seeing the bench and only being called on specific situations. And maybe that was a role that Thornton wanted to push him into. Or is it a case of we can't afford to have that luxury? We need to ice him as much as we possibly can.
Well, I think I can definitely, not think, I definitely see both sides of this. You know, I can see why Steve has done what he's done with Westgarth over the last 6 to 8 weeks. I think part of the whole healthy scratching side of things was to try and spark the big guy into action. You know, we have talked numerous times about the Westgarth signing, and I think we're all in complete agreement that he was the right signing by Steve, and what a pickup it was. And it's fair to say it hasn't overly worked out. And Steve and the team and the fan base maybe haven't seen the real Kevin Westgarth. But we did against the Cardiff Devils. A very well-known former Belfast Giants employee commented on Saturday evening that Kevin Westgarth was the difference, in his opinion, the momentum changer against the Cardiff Devils. And that was all based around two or three shifts that Westgarth put in at the Odyssey Arena, where he put Trevor Hendricks on his back. Simon Kitchen, co-commentator of mine on Giants Live, commented at the time saying that, you know, the boards behind that goal were still reverberating 2 or 3 minutes later. Such was the velocity of the hit. Mm-hmm. And things like that, you have to take into account. Whenever your team is a bit flat, Davey's 100% right. We've all played sport. We all play sport. The second that you kind of mentally, as an individual or as a team, switch off, it is so difficult to get that back. Now, in a physical sport, say, for example, before my back operation, I used to play a lot of rugby. If my team was flat, if it was struggling and what have you, needed a bit of a spark, we had one or two go-to guys who knew that they had to line somebody up and absolutely clean them. And the second that they did that, all of a sudden, everybody mentally switches again. It's like, game on, we're back in the game here. You know, the physical side of sport re-engages the brain. And for me, Davey's 100% right. In that second period, we needed two or three physical shifts because we had just flattened out. We had flatlined. So we had in that second period, and it just kept on. I'd mentioned, Paul Eady mentioned it on commentary on Premier and said, you know, maybe it's now the time to like get a bit of life in here, because the Giants, after a very good opening first period, kind of struggling to get that momentum back into the game here. And I felt definitely that Westgarth should have been utilised during that second period to spark us into life, Paddy.
Davey, going into overtime, given how much we'd outshot the Coventry Blaze, almost double in that first period, exactly double in the second period, bit tighter in the third, but still higher in the shot count. Going into overtime, you'd have hoped the Giants would basically push on and find that slot, but the actual shot count flipped. The Blaze gained more confidence in front of goal and had the better of the chances.
Can't argue with that. Yeah, we'd completely gone almost at that stage, you know, almost mentally, if you like. It's, you know, the evidence is there for everybody that watched the game, anybody that was there. We'd just completely disengaged from the game for whatever reason. I don't know. You know, I'm even finding it hard to articulate what I'm trying to say here. You know, we were so good for the first 25 minutes of that game, and we're so bad at times, you know, and in overtime, yes, you're absolutely right. We didn't take, we played, it's been called a lot over the last few months, low risk hockey. You know, we didn't want to to lose the game, making a mistake. So we were happier to sit back and try and absorb a bit of pressure. At that stage, we almost looked happy to take at the penalty shots, but, you know, penalty shots haven't really been kind to us either this season. But
David, we, all three of us know in sport and the really good teams, the team full of winners, and this is the thing, we have a team full of winners. We have guys who have been there and done it, got all the medals, got all the trophies. He who dares wins. And that is the sign of a champion. And you're quite right. We didn't show... We took the foot off the gas. It was almost that inevitability. And I said it in commentary. This is just gearing down to a penalty shootout. And as soon as that final whistle went for... Or the final buzzer went for OT, I mean, and it was going to penalties, I knew Brian Stewart was going to backstop them to that victory. So, I just felt that we just didn't... We didn't go in search of that winning goal. It was almost as if we were happy to take at the penalty shots. And that side of it was disappointing.
I'm a wee bit older than you guys, but you have probably seen the 1985 Snooker World Championships where Dennis Taylor played Steve Davis. And it went to a black ball fight in the final frame. And Steve Davis kept playing safety shots. And Dennis Taylor kept trying to pot the black, whether it went in or not. And he got lucky that it went safe and Davis... And I remember Dennis Taylor being interviewed afterwards and he said it didn't matter to him. He was going to try and win the world championship. He wasn't going to lose it trying to play a safety shot. And that's something that always stuck with me in sport. You know, you've called it there, you know, who dares wins, whatever way you want to put it. I would rather try and win being positive than lose being negative, if you like, you know. And it was disappointing that we didn't, you know, throw the balls to a wall and, you know, have a go at it. But Kusara, the season, that was the... You know, just to go back to it, that was just the story of the season.
Well, we'll come back to the Coventry Blaze in a bit and give them due credit because there's still a couple of games to talk about. But the highlights, if you want to see the highlights of that game, were from I believe it is the Premier Sports highlights that are with the official on the official EIHL website and BelfastGiants.com. Guys, let's briefly chat about the other semi-final. It was the first one of the day, Hull against the Sheffield Steelers, and it was an odd goal win for the Sheffield Steelers, who scored with less than 4 seconds on the clock to take it 3-2. Hull were without Jordan Knox, who had to fly home for a family wedding. Badly timed, but that's the way these things go. And coach, Hull were well in that game, and I think Aaron's really harsh on Hull the way it ended.
I thought Hull were absolutely brilliant. And they were, let's be honest, they were playing two-line hockey against the league champions, a very powerful Sheffield Steelers team. And I thought if I was a Hull fan or part of that Hull ownership or whatever, I'd be incredibly proud of my organisation and the team out there. They battled the whole six. I thought it was a brilliant game of hockey. It was fast. It was physical. There was goals in it. You know, people were in each other's faces. It was proper playoff hockey. And then a bit of a flatline in our game in terms of the overall playoff hockey that you come to expect. But that game was absolutely superb. And yeah, the kind of the talk before that game, I know you've mentioned it there, Jordan Knox, you know, Kiefer's cousin going home for a wedding. Jeez, if that was to happen in Belfast, it'd be all hell to pay, you know. And I'm sure that was a massive disappointment for the Hull Stingrays, because it almost looked as if, you know, they were just a player or two light, you know, obviously playing two-line hockey. You know, possibly if they got past Sheffield and got into the final, they would have been completely and utterly gassed going into a final. But what a semi-final it was, and it was a really brilliant one to call, I have to say.
Davey, how much of an effect did that holding call on Omar Pasha with 31 seconds left on the clock, how much did that have an effect on that final outcome?
It seemed to really scramble. It seemed to really get under the skin of the Hull Stingrays players. And if anything, the major loss of concentration, apart from having, you know, a very good power play coming up against you with no time left in the game, you know, if they could have just held on, who knows what would have happened. But, the Steelers have those high quality players, and they managed to come up with one opportunity and take it. But, yeah, very, very soft to call that with 30 seconds to go in a playoff semi-final when you've had your whistle in your pocket for the whole day. It's just, it's a baffling, you know. We talked about the referees last week saying, you know, you let them go. A bit of a soft holding call has ended up costing the Hull their chance of, you know, perhaps getting into the final.
That, you know, it was just absolute heartbreak for them. And you're right, you know, I think it was Billy Davies was on the, was injured obviously for the whole Stingrays, was on the bench, and he was going absolutely nuts at the referees. I've never seen a player on a bench. I'm surprised that he didn't get a misconduct, didn't get told to get off the bench, because he was just, he just lost the plot. And Pasha was the same in the box, lost the plot. And you see Matthew Waugh, like one player that you just do not leave all alone in front of goal. And it was a lovely no-look kind of backhand pass. I think it was from Colton Freder right into Matthew Waugh. And there he was, just right on the doorstep and top shelf and game winner. And absolutely broke the whole Stingrays' hearts. But again, sign of a good team. You know, battle the whole 60 minutes. And Sheffield did that. And whilst they weren't at their best, they still were able to overcome a very hard-working Hull Stingrays team.
Well, that meant that the Sheffield Steelers and the Coventry Blaze progressed to the final on Sunday. It also meant the end of the semi-finals, and as the Belfast Giants were out, that's where I checked out of the weekend. So anybody who saw me on Sunday can vouch for that. But before that final, there was one game to play, the biggest game of the day, the third, fourth place. The Belfast Giants beat the Hull Stingrays 8-6. Two goals for Lloyd, two for Keith, two for Robinson, one for Shields, and one for Mark McCutcheon. For the Stingrays, two for Osmond, two for Galbraith, one for Tanaka, and one for Jameson. Well, how do I sum up this game? Coach, Giants scored 8 goals and Hull scored 6.
The end. Yeah. I didn't watch, sorry, I'll tell a lie. I think I watched maybe 25, 30 seconds of that game.
The only power play came to the Hull Stingrays in the opening 2 minutes for a too many men call that Adam Keefe served Davy. And to be fair, I only saw about 10 minutes of this game myself.
I watched the game. I didn't go to the final, however. I jumped in the car and headed down the M5 because no interest in it. But the likes of Keller and all have talked about this third, fourth place playoff. The players have no interest in it. I don't care how many people were in that building. The people were in that building because they've paid 70 quid or whatever for a ticket, and they're looking some perceived value for it. That third, fourth place game is not value for money. I don't care what anyone says. It may have been entertaining because there was 14 goals, but at the same time, the players, no contact whatsoever. Tippy-tappy, awful, just awful standard of play by players who have obviously gone out and had themselves a beer, and quite rightly so, at the end of a very long, difficult season. You know, why shouldn't the Hull players, why shouldn't the Giants players go out and let their hair down on Saturday night? I don't buy into this. You know, some people were saying this should be more professional. For me, the minute that Brian Stewart stopped Nathan Robinson's shot, the Giants season finished, and for them players to have to go and get suited up again, for Taff to have to put all the kit out, for the players to have to go through the motions of a game, is just laughable. Something else needs put in its place. It's not fair on the players. All they're trying to do is nurse bodies through what to not get an injury. You have players going off to represent GB here this week. And this league has always cracked on about being a developmental league and all to try and aid the GB team. I'm going here now. Juices are flowing. Anybody, Craig Peacock, Colin Shields, Mark Garside, any of those players could have got hurt playing an absolute stupid game to massage people's egos in the elite league to say there's 3,500 people in watching this. Get rid of it. It's an absolute sham and you're wasting everybody's money.
Yeah, Coach Nathan Robinson made his views on it abundantly clear, taken to Twitter during the game.
I think he swiftly removed said tweet. but yes, he did. Listen, I don't like saying that necessarily from a player in our franchise speaking out like that, but I can understand totally why. I think Davey has summed it all up perfectly. I mean, we have debated this for the last couple of years. I mean, that third, fourth place is a joke. The league are constantly struggling to come up with some alternative to justify the whatever the ticket price is for the weekend, 80 quid or whatever.
Man of the people, coach.
It needs totally enough.
Do you know how much a pint of milk? How much does a pint of milk cost, coach?
Not a clue. One pint.
TV's Neil Russell.
Very good. You got me off my train of thought there. Yeah, bull. I can't even remember what I was saying. I literally can't. Do you know one thing that I do want to say, actually, talking about the Hull Stingrays? There's one player on that, sorry, there's two players, but one of them's already back with Hull. There's, I know I'm sidetracking here, but sorry, I just noticed it on the agenda and wanted to mention it during the chat about the Hull Stingrays. There's two players I would love to see in team. Carl Luzon, but he's already back with the Hull Stingrays, and yeah. The other one is Big Galbraith. I thought in that Sheffield game, he was absolutely brilliant. He's a player that I hadn't overly noticed previously. Thought he was absolutely immense in that semi-final game. Big, powerful, finished every single check, got a goal, I think. You know, just a real physical presence for those guys. But yes, listen, back to what we're saying. Third, fourth place, absolute joke. The league need to do something about it, whatever it is. I don't know. Is it a skills competition? Is it England versus Scotland again? I don't know, but they need to address it because it's unfair on the players to ask them to play in that third, fourth place game. Nobody gives a damn about it.
The one player in the whole line that stood up for me as well was Will Frederick. I thought he had a brilliant weekend. I thought an absolutely phenomenal weekend. Really quick on the puck, really good hands, really enjoyed watching him play. But yep, the Belfast Giants finished third in the playoff championship. That's higher than the Nottingham Panthers.
Paddy, see, just before we move on from the weekend, what was your own thoughts about the Giants on Saturday and the likes of the Westgarth kind of debate and what have you?
Well, listen, I remember at the end of the game, mate, you were still doing your TV and you looked up at us shaking your head and we looked back and I was shaking mine because I can't honestly believe going into that game that we played the way that we played. You look at how we dominated against Cardiff, and I know that I went in to watch it in that weekend, and anybody that spoke to me beforehand, I was supremely confident.
Me too.
Supremely confident, supremely optimistic about how the Giants would play. Look, we finally, these guys have come to the floor. We've hit the playoffs. They've realised it's the playoffs. This is what the likes of Westgarth, Sawada, Compon, all these really top players are, you know, that this is what they gear themselves up for. This is the fight that they want. So going into this weekend, we proved how good we were. We beat Cardiff in the Big Blue Tent, a team who were probably
destroyed them.
Yeah, but Cardiff were probably favourites to come in there and make a good show and maybe even make the final and go against the Sheffield Steelers, you know, and make a rematch of the Challenge Cup. And we went into that weekend. I went into that weekend thinking, we've hit the ground running here, and now it's time to mow down the team that we shut out at the Odyssey Arena 2 weeks ago and then put in a physical game against the Sheffield Steelers, who before the game against Hull and during the game against Hull proved that if you put a physical game up against the Sheffield Steelers, they start to shirk away from it because maybe the likes of Gord Baldwin doesn't want to get involved as much as he lets on. And I thought, you know, that's exactly the game we want to play. We go into that game against the Cardiff Blaze. That's about the 100th time I've called them the Cardiff Blaze this season. Went into that game against the Coventry Blaze and we started off really well. But the shot that went through the net, I think a lot of us called it as well. It did look, because it just took that sort of turn. I thought, there's something not right about that. And the 1-1, I thought, right, okay, we just get back on the horse and we go again. When we took the lead, I'm with Davey. I thought, and I think I said to my friend Alex, who was with us, I said, if we take the next one, that's it.
Yeah.
When we get the one after that, we'll get one after that, and we'll get one after that, and that'll be the end of it. But then once it came back, and once it got, the physical game vanished. The Westgarth thing, I can understand. I can understand it to an extent. I hear people laughing as they get me backing up Steve Thornton, as I always do. But I can understand it to an extent. I would have liked to have seen him in the second period. I'd have liked to have seen him be that sort of physical game changer that he was against, you know, or at least that physical presence, or throw something out there to sort of frighten the Coventry Blaze, to put them on the back foot, to make them, you know, think, make the small players think about, you know, catching a break and pushing up ice, because in comes Westgarth and he's going to take you, and there's nobody on your side who's going to respond against him because he's just too big a presence. It didn't happen. When it went to overtime, I hate to say it, but I thought that was it. I more or less, as I said to Davies, I can't see us taking this in overtime, and I definitely can't see us taking this in penalties, because we just turned flat. We just didn't have it. The guys that we wanted to basically make that next push didn't push, and it was really both frustrating, disappointing, and very sad to see, but because of it. Bunkers Hill made a lot of money, so a lot of my money. But yeah, that's where I sit on it. Very, very disappointing, that's why I put in the agenda. It was a microcosm of the season, and I think quite a few people said that after the game. It was the fact that it just seemed it just didn't have that next step, which was very disappointing. But fair play to the Coventry Blazers. We'll come back to look at the Giants season a little later on. Just have a quick word about how we feel it went overall. I think everybody knows that anyway. But quick look at the final, boys. Coventry Blaze against the Sheffield Steelers. I know in Bunkers beforehand, we went across the panel that was there, and you know, with yourself, Murph, Killer, Paul Eddy, and I think it was a 3-1 that it was going to be the Sheffield Steelers. That they were so strong, and that they, as the league champions, they could probably see this out in the final. But not for the first time in a one-off final this season, the Sheffield Steelers were defeated. The Coventry Blaze cantered to a 4-0 lead in the first couple of periods, and deservedly so. Great attack and play, and ended up taking the title, coach. And you can't say anything other than it was very well deserved.
I have to say, the Coventry Blaze really, really surprised me in that final, purely because of how they came out of the traps. They're a team that have become very defensively sound, as we've already talked about. They like a lot of whistles in the game. They like a lot of broken play. And in this game, right from the start, they came flying at Sheffield. And literally, they looked like a transformed team, a team full of confidence, guys who you haven't seen play with a lot of passion, confidence, flair, all of a sudden came to the party. And Sheffield, at numerous different stages throughout the opening exchanges of that game, looked totally and utterly shell-shocked with how Coventry came out and played. And, you know, as you say on the agenda there, you know, cantered to a 4-0 lead. And it was definitely, without question, deservedly so. And, you know, again, we talk about you know, doing the dirty thing, getting the shots on goal, looking for those rebounds. And my goodness, did Josh Eunice offer up a lot of rebounds in that final? You know, I think I heard somebody mention over the course of the weekend, like, they call them trampoline pads. Hmm. You know, because his rebound control was absolutely shocking. You know, and I think Sheffield were still very much undecided as to whether they were going to bring Josh Eunice back next season. I think that playoff weekend and certainly that final probably put the final nail in the coffin in terms of whether or not they were going to bring him back. I could see Sheffield going for somebody else. I know that maybe sounds harsh on the back of one game, but you know, listen, taking nothing away from the Coventry Blaze, thought they were absolutely superb.
But he looked a bit like Phil DeRuvel. That's a reference to the reference to the teenagers there. Davey, listen, we've talked about Chuck Webber time and time again about him being such an experienced coach in this league. He got this game absolutely right, and it looked like before the Blaze even hit the ice, he had those lads fired up.
You're maybe right. I wasn't there. Remember, wasn't there, haven't seen it.
That's right.
The only highlight I have seen is is on Don't Say, with Mark Thomas not covering him. It was Mark Thomas one, not covering himself in a whole lot of glory for a breakaway goal by the Coventry Blaze. But, you know, Chuck Webber has done very well with the Blaze. He's definitely turned that country club mentality that Mark Lefebvre struggled to get broken. Chuck Webber has came in there, maybe coming from outside the league, and I think Coach talked about it in the View from the Bridge live. Sorry, A View from the Bridge stroke Cat's Whiskers live. Talked about, you know, the things that he's put in there, the physical regime, the food, the travel, everything is done regimented, you know, and he's turned that club around, and it remains to be seen whether Chuck Webber will be there next season. The talk is that he won't be, but the players are being signed left, right and centre, so somebody's doing it. So it'd be interesting, but yeah, I would imagine he had them up, but really have to leave the coach to talk about the final. I was away huffing.
Well, Coach, a moment about Team GB's Mark Thomas and a bit of a trip over the blue line and letting Ross Venus just skate up ice. What ended up being the game-winning goal?
Superb play from Ross Venus. Put on the jets and very cool, calm, collected as he skated in on Josh Eunice. And yeah, that was a game-winning goal, and you could just see Mark Thomas, just the deflation on the Sheffield Steelers bench as well. I mean, that's a critical mistake. by number 44 in Orange. And yeah, listen, the Blaze were better than just being opportunistic on Sunday. They were a lot better than that. But in sport, you've got to take opportunities whenever they come your way, and that's exactly what Ross Venus did. It's great to see a young British guy doing that. You know, having that confidence, having the speed, having that tenacity to pinch that puck away, getting up the ice. Mark Thomas, you know, was chasing after him, trying to put him under pressure and what have you. Very cool, calm, collected, and absolutely superb finish. But just wanted to go back to David, who was talking about, you know, the regimented side with Chuck Weber and what have you. It was something that you know, a few of us sitting in the hotel reception whenever the Coventry Blaze arrived on Friday noticed. Weber led his team into the hotel, mm-hmm. sat the team down, went up to the hotel reception, got the keys for all of his team, handed out the keys, you know, was laying out the law in terms of team meeting at such and such, team dinner at such and such. I mean, unequivocally, he was the boss. He ran the ship. He was the captain of the ship. And what he said went, and you can see the level of respect that the players had from him or for him. Do you know what? It was like old school in many ways, almost like the headmaster, but the headmaster that you really like, the headmaster that you know is getting a lot out of you. He's making you as good as you possibly can be, so you respect him. And you know, I thought it was brilliant to see that type of thing.
Before I interviewed him for the SoundCloud account, did you hear it? SoundCloud.com/AVFTV was just off the record. It said, you know, you've ruined my weekend, coach. And he says, this is Chuck Weber. He says, are you in your weekend, my weekend coach? And he said, that's my job, which is a fair point.
That's a fair point.
Well, and like I say, Stuart being held high as the hero of the weekend, coach, and you can't really argue with that.
Brian Stuart?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I thought he was excellent. Man Mountain. And goal, got great reaction, saves, you know, for a big guy, gets down as well. Good with the pad, saves. He's very good post to post. He's got great movement. He's got a hot glove, it seems, all season long. He's been the standout goalie this season in the league. And I think Coventry Blaze did something very, very special there, getting the contract down in front of him while he was probably still a bit hungover.
Yeah.
And got him signed up. Is it a 2-year deal?
2-year deal. No messing about there, boy. Fellow, you know, boy, still half cut.
Yeah. Big Pease has done a great job there over in Coventry. You know, strike while iron's hot and all the rest. And what a goaltender. You know, a few teams around the league will be envious to see him back in goal.
Here, have a pint, Brian. Oh, here, by the way, could you sign this for my daughter? Could you sign this for my daughter, please? What's that? Never mind. that also takes the Coventry Blaze into the Continental Cup at the cost of the Cardiff Devils, who were lurking on, who would have progressed had the Sheffield Steelers won that title. But good luck to the Coventry Blaze returning to the Continental Cup. They did well last time they were there. They beat Linz, or was there some Linz Black Wings? I remember they beat somebody very good. But what it also did, guys, and Davey, I'll come to you, is the fact that we talked about how the league has improved, and the Belfast Giants were without doubt, okay, we only won the league last season, but we were without doubt the strongest team in the league. A lot of people said, you know, we should have won a lot more. And the fact is, we have this season five different teams winning five different pieces of silverware, coach. You know, Steelers of the league title, Blaze of the playoff title, Devils have the Challenge Cup, the Panthers of the Arhard, and the Clan with the Gardener. Now, that's either a symbol of the fact that there's more parity in the league, or that the league is actually just on hold, taking a little bit of a step up, considering how dominant the Giants were last season.
Yeah, it's. I think it's been debated by a lot of people. You know, has the league improved, or you know, is there just a bit more parity, equilibrium across the teams or whatever? I'm not 100% sure. I don't necessarily think the league has grown massively in terms of overall quality. I mean, you know, I thought Sheffield were good to watch on occasion. I thought the best team for me overall throughout the course of the season to watch were the Cardiff Devils. I thought I loved watching their brand of hockey. It was kind of old school and what have you. But listen, you know, we talked about it actually over the course of the weekend, you know, on Sunday, whenever, you know, it came out, you know, five different teams winning the five different trophies on, you know, up, that were up for grabs. And I suppose from a league perspective, that's good. You know, half the teams in the league have something to celebrate and kind of say, you know, well, it was a reasonably productive season for us, no matter no matter what. I mean, the Steelers will be delighted that they've won the league championship. They'll have wanted the Challenge Cup. They'll have wanted that playoff trophy as well, just kind of falling away. But, you know, for other teams such as the Devils after their season last year and the last few years where they've been kind of in the doldrums and what have you, coming back to the fore under new ownership. But yeah, it's been good to see overall, Paddy. And yeah, long may it continue, I suppose, as well, to a large extent.
Well, let's have a quick look around the league at this point, boys. There's quite a few little bits of information have come out both before the playoffs and after the playoffs. Now, the first one I'm going to talk about is one that came out on the morning of April Fool's Day. Who releases PR on the morning of April Fool's Day? Whose PR machine is clever enough to release things on the morning of April Fool's Day and actually mean it seriously? Yes, the Sheffield Steelers. Matty Roy, has been signed to a 2-year deal at Sheffield. And Davey, the guy won countless awards with regards to being player of the season, both with the IHJ UK and the Elite League's own awards. And, you know, it's not surprising that the Sheffield Steelers moved quickly to put his signature on a piece of paper.
Checkbook hockey is back. Isn't that what they used to get accused of, or would they accuse the Panthers of, or whichever way around it was back in the day? Yeah.
Cardiff Devils, I think, got it as well.
I'm sure that Matty Roy is not on a cheap deal at Sheffield, and they are, you know, they're the team that's boasted about having the big budgets, and to be fair to them, they went away and won the league this year, and only but for, you know, a little bit of that Doug Christensen collective exhale, they could well have gone on and done the double, because they're arguably on, you know, the best team wins the league over the 50 odd games, and yeah, the playoffs can be a bit of a lottery, but They've signed a stud there, like, you know, 100 points, what was 101 points over the season. You can get that kind of guy locked up to another deal. You do whatever you can to get him. And yeah, April Fool, the joke was on us, you know. Dave Sims wasn't joking whenever he put the news out.
Coach, you know, what a fantastic player. And a guy who also has a bit of loyalty. I think he was in Florida for about 6 or 7 seasons. So he likes to go somewhere and settle.
Yeah, very much so. And that's a fantastic capture by Jared Adams and the Steelers. As Davey quite rightly says, I mean, whenever you get somebody new to your roster, new to the league, and he comes in and sticks up over a ton of points, I mean, absolutely superb player. Does it all. You know, scores good goals, scores greasy goals, scores, you know, block shots on the penalty kill, you know, back checks hard. Just a complete team man who puts up a lot of offense for his team. And, you know, yeah, 100% right. Whenever you get a player like that, you do not let him go easily. And you're also right, you know, he spent 6 seasons, I think it was, with the Florida Everblades, and now he's going to spend in the next 2 years with Sheffield, so it'll be 3 in total. So he's definitely one of those types of guys that likes to get into the swing of things in terms of the community and set up shop, I suppose, for want of a better term.
And go ahead.
It's crucial too, but that Jared Adams signs him line mates. You know, Matthew Roy didn't score all those points without somebody passing the puck to him. And we had a bit of that whenever, you know, they separated John Pelly and Scott Matzka. Wasn't the same player. You know, you have to get that chemistry on the line. So, you know, it's up to Jared Adams to get him a couple of line mates there to get him back towards that 100 points again. I'm hoping that he'll slump off next season, but who knows?
I think Fredder's already back. I think he's on a 2-year deal.
Be interesting to see who Jared Adams brings in, just if he can keep that line together. And as we speak about 2-year deals, we spoke last week about Ryan Finnerty being under pressure in the Clan job. He's got a 2-year deal coming back at Brayhead, and he's also won Elite League Coach of the Year at the Elite League Awards during the week. Coach, and I'll be honest with you, I found both of those to be a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, I think from what our good friend in Cardiff mentioned, I think some of those votes had to be in, or the votes had to be in for that Coach of the Year by the 10th of March or something along those lines. I think everybody, which I don't really understand, but you know, at that stage, I think everybody was saying Brayhead Clan are going to win the league. For me, the Coach of the Year, without doubt, Andrew Lord. I think Omar Pasha has to be given a lot of credit as well. But for me, Andrew Lord, you know, rookie coach, player coach, most difficult job in hockey, we always say it. and what he did in Cardiff this season, putting that team together, obviously with the like or with the help of the likes of Kelman, but you know, very much on the ice product was down to Andrew Lord and how he set up his team. And to me, he was a coach of the year. But yeah, Finner picked up a 2-year deal in Brayhead. I think it's a good move. I know we'll probably slightly disagree on this one. You know, to me, I saw enough behind the scenes there to see exactly what Finner and Gareth Chalmers are kind of building in Brayhead. You know, and I really do think over the next 3, 4, 5 years, Brayhead are going to be a real powerhouse in this league. They're going to get the backing financially from the ownership. And I like what Finner brings to the party in terms of, as a coach, the guys that certainly this year are going to really speak really for this year's team, but those guys to a man absolutely love the guy. You know, Finner's old school. He's the type of coach that, you know, if you need to kick up the backside, he'll give it to you. But if you need some time off and, you know, relax and what have you, Finner will give it to you as well. He's old school coach and the players respond to that. Yes, they choke down the stretch. There's no question about that. But yeah, I think Ryan Finnerty will just keep getting better year on year on year as a coach.
Well, to me, I like Finnerty. I think he's a nice player. I hated him as a player. Every time we play, you know, he was just one of those players I just really despised because he was just a gritty in your face type guy. He would just do things you don't like. I always remember him taking a shot on Stephen Murphy after the buzzer and went and getting absolutely cleaned by Jeffrey Suez, you know, for doing it. And it was, you know, that sort of player. And also, I also feel a little bit sorry for him, the fact that he's coaching wise, he's been the nearly man. You know, he's been so close to winning a league title a couple of times now with two different teams and just not made it there. He's been knocked out of the playoffs with a team three times, twice at the hands of the whole Stingrays, funnily enough, and just maybe not being able to make that next step. It will happen for him because I think as year goes on year, he gets a little bit more coaching experience behind him. And when he's given the backing of an organization like the Brayhead clan, be they with Neil Black the next season or be they, as rumors have it, without Neil Black next season, but as long as he's got the backing of that club, I think he'll take that next step. Speaking of coaches, Davey, We spoke about Hull earlier on, and Omar Pasha and Lauzon are back as the joint coaching team there. And there's no doubt that Bobby McEwen had to make that move.
Interesting you talk of Bobby McEwen there. Was it not mooted at the weekend that was also his swan song at the weekend, that he was off ski?
There was that, yeah.
But, you know, good for Hull, good for Clan. Continuity in your coaching when you've had successful seasons is all important. You know, knee-jerk reaction is to kick a coach to the curb when they're a nearly man. You know, and Finnerty has done very well there. Pasha has had a tremendous season up in Hull with the resources available to him. You know, I'm glad to see a bit of continuity in those two teams. I think it'll strengthen the league when the likes of Hull and Brayhead, that other conference, you know, can only be good. Well, if that's a strong conference, it challenges the other conference to be good as well. So, exciting time for Hull. You know, it's good that, you know, come first weekend in April, they already know their coach is back, their star player is back, and they've got plenty to look forward to over the summer.
The one thing I liked about Pasha, especially in that first semi final, was his calm control on the ice. He took the puck behind the net, stopped it, could see that Hull were being a little bit overrun, held the puck, could see he had a lot of ice time, a lot of space, and was just there basically making his line change, you go, you on, just pointing from behind the goal. Let's get this set up, and then off he went. I like that style. I like that control that a player can have on the ice. But coach, speaking of player coaches going the other way, Richard Hartman at the Edinburgh Capitals, it's been announced that he's moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Bit of a strange press release.
Yeah.
I think from the Edinburgh Capitals, announcing Richard Hartman disappearing and Kyle Flemington coming in. But then I think the press release started to tuck into the fans almost for giving Flemington
social media abuse.
Yeah, it's very, very strange from an organisation, but hey ho. But yeah, Hartman's left. He's moved on. So maybe the least said about that, the better.
Quickly going through a few little bits of news. The a Scottish elite select team coached by Todd Duddiam, the Fife Flyers head coach, defeated Team Romania at Fife Ice Arena the other night. And we spoke about it many times in the last couple of weeks, Davey, about how it was very, very strange that Craig Peacock wasn't in the Team GB setup. And with Liam Stewart taking an injury, you know, Craig has now been able to make that step up. Now, we asked Stewart to comment, but he said, I don't wanna talk about it. How you break my... Sorry, no, had to give it that. But
bravo, Patrick. Bravo.
Thank you. But it's but without doubt, Pete Russell only had one player to choose when a forward position came available.
He should have been in the team to start with. You know, it's a baffling decision that the top scoring, you know, the top goal scoring British player in the elite league, in the top British league, can't make the GB team. You know, that tells me an awful lot about the guy that's in charge of the team. But, you know, they've gone there tonight. They've been playing tonight. I don't know what the final score was. It was 2-2 the last time I heard. But, you know, Liam Stewart will have his time again. You know, there's no doubt that he's an up-and-coming talented player. And it's good for Peaks to be back in the squad. I'm sure he was very disappointed being left out. It's good that there's Giants representation. It gives us something. It keeps our hockey going for another few weeks. And good luck to Peaks.
Coach?
I agree entirely with Davey. I mean, again, the Peacock omission from that squad was the talk of talk around the playoffs at the weekend. I mean, everybody that I spoke to just... Yeah, was literally amazed. Just could not understand for one second why a player of that quality was not in the GB squad. I think if you were to even ask the vast majority of the squad selected, they would probably say exactly the same thing. Very, very strange omission by Pete Russell. But you know, listen, he's got his opportunity now, and I'm sure he'll go in there with a bit more of a even more of a renewed vigor and a will to succeed and kind of ram it back down Pete Russell's throat.
Although, one of the final bits of news, the start of the 2015-16 season will be Saturday the 5th of September. The Challenge Cup final will once again be held as a one-off at the Motorpoint Arena in Sheffield on Sunday the 6th of March 2016. And your playoff finals weekend was announced as being the 2nd and 3rd of April 2016 at the National Ice Centre in Nottingham. Davey's delighted.
Which one of those three pieces of news depresses me, Paddy?
It's the National Ice Centre in Nottingham.
No,
the Challenge Cup final.
The Challenge Cup will once again take, what is it, September, October, November, December, January, March, February, March.
Yeah.
The Challenge Cup final will take 7 months of an 8-month season to be played. Come on, the Friar Tuck. Sort this out, boys. You are a laughing stock. It's terrible. It's terrible. I don't know how many times people need to bang on about it. If they believe this is a successful and prestigious tournament, they're pissing in the wind. It's a terrible decision. And once again, in Sheffield, I'd like to know how that money's divvied out. You know, are Sheffield getting a wee bit extra out of this? Because if they are, that's another thing that would just me off.
You're an angry man tonight, David. I'm saying.
No, sorry about that.
I think it's Murph from the other week rubbing off on you.
He probably sees what's about to come up in the agenda here shortly.
Well, we'll come to that in a second, but we'll come back to the Coventry Blaze, and we got an opportunity to chat with a man that if you make your way down to the Sky Dome or you go to playoffs, he's a tall presence, if anything else, and that's Craig Somerton, well-known Coventry Blaze fan, very active on Twitter, and a font of all knowledge with regards to the Coventry Blaze. And he got to chat with our very own Neil Russell earlier today.
Delighted to say, joining us on A View from the Bridge this week is a very happy Coventry Blaze fan and regular listener to the show, Craig Somerton. Firstly, Craig, you're very welcome on this week's podcast.
Thanks, Neil. In the words of our own coach, I appreciate it. And I hope you're going to have Hitchy on here as well, because his reflections on the final are going to be far more interesting than mine.
Well, here, listen, let's get started. Let's talk about right from at the top of the season, Mark Lefebvre installed as the head coach of the Coventry Blaze after doing fairly well towards the back end of last season. But it's fair to say the early part of that of this season didn't really go according to plan, and Mark Lefebvre was ushered out the door.
He was, and I think at the time it was the right decision. in retrospect, I think Mark Lefebvre was the wrong appointment, especially after the evidence of Mats Soderstrom. I think Mats Soderstrom was the right appointment at the time for continuity's sake after Thompson left. But Mark Lefebvre, no, it just didn't work out for him. I think we're a club who needs an experienced leader. We need a hockey guy at the top of the organisation, because all due respect to our other owners, Andy Buxton and Mike Cowley, after Tomo left, I don't think we ever really filled that void of that experienced hockey guy there. So, and obviously Chuck has come in and I think he's proven what I've just said there.
Well, you mentioned the man of the moment, so to speak, Chuck Webber, came in around Christmas time, and to say he has transformed that Coventry Blaze team and franchise and given you a renewed energy, it'd be probably putting it lightly, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I think the job he's done is nothing short of remarkable, to be honest. When we announced him, I did a bit of research on him, and in 2010, he won the Kelly Cup in the ECHL. And in his own words there, he said he won it with a bunch of no-name grunts that found a way, I think were his words. And, I mean, that was what we were looking for at the time. But, I mean, to go on and do what he's done, it's unbelievable, really. And I suppose at this moment as well, we should just give a thanks to Paul Thompson, James Pease, and the old Basingstoke guy, Mark Bernard, who did such a great job in getting Chuck in to help us out in the first place.
It's funny, some of your follow your social media and your tweets and what have you, and it's something that's been kind of the talk ever since Chuck Webber's come in and done so well. Do you think it's now time where elite league clubs, on the back of the success that Webber has brought you guys with this playoff trophy and how well you guys did down the stretch as well in terms of the league, is it now time where league general managers and owners are now going to start looking elsewhere as opposed to promoting from within?
I hope so. Brayhead Clan haven't shown evidence of that, but I suppose that's another story. In my opinion, Chuck has come in and he's shown up coaching in the elite league. In general, I mean, there's teams who can't afford a proper bench coach, which is understandable. But I mean, the job Chuck has done in the particularly in the playoffs against Nottingham, against you guys, and against Sheffield, in my opinion, he was the difference. Those coaches were outcoached, in my opinion.
One other one of your players that stood out to everybody, I think, right from the start of the season, and certainly over the playoff finals weekend again, was your goaltender Brian Stewart. And some good news that's come out for you guys over the last 24 hours is you've been able to secure him to another deal. But just talk a wee bit about what Brian Stewart brought to your franchise throughout the course of last season.
Well, he's been outstanding. We've been quite lucky in Coventry in that we've had some very good goalies. Jody Lehman, Trevor Koenig. I suppose it's unfair to put Brian Stewart up there already, but on, I suppose, limited evidence of just one season, you've got to think that, you know, in the next 2 years after in this current deal, he's going to be up there with those two guys. At the start of the season, we were winning games under Lefebvre. And then we got injuries. In my opinion, we, as some have argued, we were relying on Stewart too much. But since Chuck has come in, all credit goes to those guys in front of him. As he said in an interview today that I posted up, we were still getting lots of shots against, but there weren't high scoring opportunities. They were cut down significantly. So, I mean, fantastic Stewart he is, but credit to those guys in front of him for the second half of the season as well.
Well, let's get on to the weekend that has just been and gone, the playoff finals weekend in Nottingham. And let's talk about that semi-final game, the Coventry Blaze coming up against our own, or my own Belfast Giants, not your own. You know, what was your thoughts on that game overall? I know I was calling that game along with Paul Eadie and Aaron Murphy, and, you know, at various different times. It was a pretty difficult game to call on occasion. It wasn't certainly filled with the excitement of the first semi-final.
No, absolutely. It was kind of a weird atmosphere, especially periods one and two. It was very flat in the building. I'm not sure the reason for that. I mean, the first game was fantastic, and maybe just the come down from that one was part of it. But I mean, the Blaze are always, with the tools that they've got, they were always going to try and, I suppose, bore the game and bore their way to a win. That's the way we've played under Chukwueze, because that's all we can do. We haven't got any, exciting attacking guys, if you see what I mean. I mean, I say that, we were 4-0 up in the final, but but the Giants game in general, I mean, we were heavily outshot in that game. I think it was 29-40, something or other.
I think at the end of the second period, I think it was something along the lines of 25 shots to the Belfast Giants and 10 to the Coventry Blaze. And at the time, yeah, Paul Leary said, you're just never going to win a game of hockey, you know, getting 5 shots on goal per period. And it just shows you, you know, if you, and it probably goes back to the point that you just made there about the overall quality of the shots going in on Brian Stewart.
Yeah, I don't think there was too many high quality of those 40 odd. I mean, the Jeff Mason goal to begin with was absolutely unreal. Thank God for TV replay on the Sindal goal, because I don't think anybody reacted in the whole building when that shot went through the net. Apart, I think.
You haven't listened to that. You haven't watched the Premier Sports back, have you, Craig?
I haven't had time. I've only watched the final. Did you get it spot on?
I did. Old cricket eyes here got it straight on. But Murph and Paul Leary didn't pick up on that one. But it was an absolute blast of a shot. That and such a strange occurrence as well. I don't think any of us have seen the puck go into the net like that and then shoot off at that 90-degree angle.
No, and I don't think any of the Blaze fans reacted at all. But I think, in general, the feeling amongst the Blaze fans, they were more nervous about that Belfast game and throughout that, rather than in the final. I think in the final, a lot of us were more confident because we matched up well against Sheffield. But go on.
You talk there about the final, and you mentioned previously about the Coventry Blaze not, you know, been a real flair team, a team that you know have been limited in terms of their output with offense. But in that final, as you quite rightly say, I thought the Blaze were absolutely exceptional, and I think really surprised Sheffield in the way in which they came out of the trap so quickly.
Absolutely, they surprised us. I mean, one of my friends said to me at the second period, "Who's the team in blue?" It was quite unbelievable. That was definitely the best performance that we've had all season. But in the Belfast game, I mean, that Tendler goal was huge. Cometh the hour, cometh the man. He's had his criticism, but I mean, you can't knock the guy. He came up big when it really mattered. And then we were always going to back Brian Stewart in the shootout. And credit to Ben Arndt as well, who's been clutch in the shootout for us.
Well, that's the final game then on Sunday against the Sheffield Steelers. You know, we've already said how quickly you guys came flying out of the traps, and what an absolutely remarkable turnaround for your club, with a club that had a lot of negativity attached to it for maybe the first half of the season, but to actually go on and win the playoff championships, the big dance, the final opportunity to get your hands on some silverware, and you guys did it, and I'm sure it was a very, very enjoyable Sunday evening in Nottingham for you and all the Coventry fans.
Well, it was, and I think this one probably meant more to us than the Grand Slam, arguably, because we've had some tough times as a club, financial issues with Paul Thompson leaving, etc. And there's guys in the office who have taken criticism, right and wrongly, and us as a club in general, really. But I'm just so delighted for the office staff and people like Steve Small on the bench, who was mentioned today. I don't think he's had a day off all year. So this is just great for people like that, and the players and the fans and everybody.
And now it's a case of, from your perspective, trying to kick on and try and get that signature of Chuck Webber.
Well, absolutely. I think the feeling's positive that he will sign. but you never know what's going to come in. I think some personal circumstances might help in our favour, but you just never know what's going to happen. But James Pease on our radio show, Face Off, he was constantly saying it's now time to push on. We can't rest on this anymore.
Well, listen, Craig, I just want to say congratulations, first and foremost, to you and your club. Richly deserved. Thought you guys were excellent over the weekend. And have a great off-season, and we'll catch up again at the start of September for the new season.
Okay, again, thanks and appreciate it.
Craig Somerton, thanks to him again. One of the true gents of British.
Just about to say that, Paddy. Man of the weekend there, one of the true gents of British hockey.
To be fair, after the semi-final, I was that annoyed, and I came over with a pint, stood outside, and there he was, and he just, with a big smile on his face, went, I've been looking forward to seeing you. I bet you bloody well have. But no, top lad, and it's great. Thanks for him for coming on and chatting to us. Gents, two more things on the agenda. First of all, Giants news. Adam Keefe will return to the Belfast Giants. And we talked about Daryl Lloyd. He's returning to the Belfast Giants. And tonight it was announced that Craig Peacock will be back in Tail for another year. Coach this team, starting to build already.
Yeah, and you got to bring back your key guys. And the likes of Keefe, Peacock, Lloyd, they're key guys. Those guys are the backbone of our franchise. And this will be, what, Kiefer's fifth season, Lloyd's fifth season, Peacock's seventh season.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are the backbone of our organisation. Hopefully we get a couple more. I'm sure a couple more are already signed up. Just a waiting announcement and what have you. But we had to do it. We've done it. Keith was already on a two-year deal, but it's good to get that thrown back out there just to stave off any polite inquiries that may have come the likes of Lloyd and Kiefer's way, and Peacock's way as well, don't forget. So, that's brilliant, and I look forward to them coming back. And I think we'll have quite a change next season. So I think it's always good to have those types of guys there just to remind the new guys exactly what this club's all about.
Davey, there's some tough decisions for Steve Thornton this offseason.
There will be tough decisions for him coming up, yeah, who goes, who stays, but, you know, let's look on the positive side of things here. The three guys that he's locked up for next season already. Yes, coach has already said they're the backbone, the heartbeat of this team.
Ding!
Craig Peacock, 20-odd goals again this season. You lock up your top British talent in this league because of the way the import British player system's set up. And you have the likes of Nottingham and Brayhead spouting off at the weekend that they're going to play four-line hockey and they're going to have X amount of Brits, you know. And, you know, so it's even more crucial. The British talent, again, this summer will be at a premium because there's the depth pool will be plundered. And it's great to have Craig Peacock back in the Giants uniform again. Adam Keefe speaks for himself. You know, this is our franchise players. Coaches said many, many times, how do you replace Paxton Schulte? You know, Adam Keefe has done that with great aplomb. The stuff he does off the ice, the stuff he does on the ice, you know, this guy is the leader of this club, and to have his line mate Daryl Lloyd back, you know, let's lock Garce up and have that the heartbeat line, as coach likes to call him, back again. And but yeah, there'd be tough decisions. Stephen Murphy's going to have to prove his fitness again for the club, or, you know, do we go down the import netminder route if unfortunately Murph can't get back the level of fitness he needs to be at for elite league hockey? There'd be boys retiring that I'm sure we'll talk about in a few minutes. Big summer ahead, and this is what we've been banging on about. You know, Steve Thornton didn't get to recruit the team last summer. You know, this is now a chance either for Thornton to recruit this team or see what direction the club are going to go over the next couple of months. You know, it's exciting. You know, we can't do anything about what's going on now. You know, we'll lock it up, throw away the key, throw the puck in the bin, as we said a couple of times when we lost games to Edinburgh over the last number of years. You know, you can't change what you can't change. And it's time to look forward to September.
Coach, best of luck to Robbie Sandrock, a guy whose retirement has now taken place. We didn't want to talk about any retirements or anything last week because we knew that, you know, they hadn't taken place at that point. We now know that Robbie Sandrock has hung up the skates to finish off a superb career, both in British hockey, US hockey, and across Europe. And there may be other guys retiring, there may be other guys not returning, but there's been a few unofficial announcements, a few rumours being thrown about. But you can't fault a lot of the effort being thrown in from these guys, and we as fans, though at times we've thrown a lot of abuse, and though fans with a lot of praise, we've always been very grateful.
I said this to Robbie over the last few days. Whenever I first started to watch the Belfast Giants, people like the obvious guys such as Schulte were the guys that you loved. Those guys that went out, dropped the gloves, got stuck in. All of a sudden, very quickly became the franchise player, Mr. Belfast and what have you. I used to love watching players like Shane Johnson as well, Todd Kelman, Jason Bowen. Loved all those guys. Corey Carlander. Big, big favourites of mine that opening season.
Jerry Keefe.
No. As well as I get on with
Steve Cooper, Roberts.
Didn't really like Steve Roberts. I just spent more time at McDonald's than I did. But Robbie, for me, when Robbie arrived with our club in that 2002-2003 season, he was the first player, and I'd only started to watch hockey in that opening season, and Robbie was the first player that really captured my imagination in terms of, I used to watch his positional play. I used to watch how he skated. I used to love his shot. I used to, like, I was one of the ones, every time he got the puck, shoot, Robbie, shoot. You know, that shot was, and still is, lethal. Easily in that season, in his first season with the club, became my, like, I was his, along with Oxo, I think, you know, his number one fan. And, you know, what followed his career when he went off to Germany and all that type of stuff. And, you know, you used to have to, you know, in the early days and all the rest, you're trying to find websites and all this type of stuff. And every summer it was constantly, are we ever going to get Sandrock back? We're going to get him back. And eventually he comes back. And a guy who on the ice gives it his all. Maybe an injury or two has maybe caught up with him this season and what have you. But, you know, a guy who is lethal with those shots. Some great, great memories. I can remember vividly in that first season of his. Been over at the NIC and he had a shot from the blue line. I can't remember. It was a Finnish goaltender that season for the Nottingham Panthers. And the shot from Robbie, we were plonked right on the blue line. And the shot went in and it was past the goalie before he could even flinch and try and get the glove up at it. And, you know, he gave the Belfast fans some absolutely brilliant moments in Teal. You know, it was a pivotal player whenever things didn't go so well behind the scenes a couple of years ago with the ownership issue. A pivotal guy who kept things together in that locker room along with other leaders such as Kiefer and what have you. But, you know, Robbie was one of those kind of quiet guys off the ice. He wasn't the larger-than-life type personality, but an absolutely superb player for the Belfast Giants. And, you know, we wish him all the very best as he heads into retirement and enters the real world, some might say. Mm-hmm. But a brilliant player for us, Paddy.
Davey, a man who in his first season with the Belfast Giants as a defenseman was top scorer. Absolutely, absolutely phenomenal for the club, and it's sad to see him hang up the skates.
And he's kept it going his whole Belfast Giants career. You know, he's finishing just short of 200 points in 237 games for the Giants. And I think you used the term there, phenomenal. And it is, you know, he's just slightly behind Todd Kelman and Shane Johnston in terms of total points output, but with half the games, you know, like just Shane Johnston, for example, got his at 0.41, you know, points per game, where Robbie get them at 0.82, you know, and Shane Johnston, arguably one of the greatest ever Belfast Giants defensemen, you know. Robbie had it all. He had that shot. He had the transitional game. He's a good D man. He's a solid guy off the ice for the organization. And he's been, he's been a Belfast Giants treasure. And he will be very, very sadly missed by the organization. As coach says, as he heads out in the real world, and all we can do on a view from the bridge, and as fans, as a fanboy of Robbie Sandrock, is say thanks very much, Robbie, for your service to this club and all the enjoyment you give us over the years, and all the very, very best of luck with your future.
And from a personal note, I enjoyed watching him in that first season. I remember it very well. I just remember some phenomenal shots that maybe went high and wide and came off the glass, but even if they did, or they came straight off the, it was always those rebounds that were picked up because it would be a rocket of a shot and it would just come back and it would hit the back of the net that we picked up because it was a danger, and sometimes it would go in and he was an absolute danger pushing forward, but he was so quick getting back as well. You know, he never forgot his defensive duties no matter how much he wanted to press high. But the highlight for me came against Craig Kowalski and shooting from his own zone. Taking that,
play the audio, Paddy.
I'll put a note in here to play the audio. But hold on, let's play the audio now.
They've been fantastic at the forecheck all night long, and the Belfast Giants, as you quite rightly say, coughed up the puck twice there.
4-on-4 hockey for 2 seconds. One, and now the penalty of the Giants is... Oh, goal! Oh, my goodness! Robbie Sandra inside his own blue line has made it 3-2. What was Craig Kowalski thinking? And the Giants fans are on their feet, and Kowalski skates away. You just never, ever see that. A nice hockey rink and shorthanded. Robbie Sandrock, I'm certain he was inside his own zone as he unloaded a shot. It just went, how did Kowalski miss it? It's 3-2 Giants. I just don't believe it.
And you can hear it from that audio, the fact that how excited, you've got
amazed.
Yeah, you've got Nigel Ringland just basically winding down the clock on a specialties play and just going, "Ah, Robbie Sandrock!" It's like, and you don't see it, and that's what Robbie did. He would just look up and he'd go, "You know what? I'm just going to hit this because what's the worst that's going to happen? We're going to make a line change. It's the end of this. I'm just going to take a shot." And he'd take a shot, and it went straight past Kowalski, who was busy concentrating on the black seats behind him. But you know, or whatever Mick Cullen said it was. But and that was the type of player Robbie was. He will be very sadly missed by the organisation, most certainly on the ice, and the very, very best wishes to him for the future. Guys, we're going to wrap this up with a couple of more things, and it's going to be a very difficult question for us both to answer, and I'll throw in my own penny's worth as well. But, Coach, when you look back at the 2014-2015 Elite League season with the Belfast Giants, what would your thoughts be?
Very, very disappointing. I would thought about this a lot this season. As we all, I think we've all reflected immensely at different junctures this season about this team, about previous teams, about why is this just not clear? What, there's something missing. I just believe that with this season, for a few different reasons, lost a bit of our mojo, and we need to get that mojo back ASAP. Can we do it? 100% we can. But I look back at this season, and I think overall, over the course of our 15 seasons, it's probably been the most disappointing out of all those 15 seasons. And I based that comment on the fact that, you know, I can remember times when Stewie, for example, was head coach of the club. Stewie was a gem. He was signing players on a shoestring budget. We as fans at that juncture knew damn rightly, we were just grateful to have a team out on the ice. We knew we weren't expected to make the Final Four necessarily. We knew the likes of Coventry and Sheffield were going to be the powerhouses and probably beat us to the league championship and what have you. Uh-huh. But for me this season, when you look at the talent at our disposal and what we added to that roster throughout the course of the season, for me, easily the most disappointing season in terms of results on the ice, without a shadow of a doubt.
David?
I see on the agenda there, Paddy, you know, you've noted injuries and, you know, punctuated Stephen Murphy and Kevin Surratt. Missing those two guys for the vast majority of our season was, you know, two very critical cogs in the wheel. And, you know, you run down the players statistically didn't have terrible, you know, Ray Suada, Mike Kopp and Chevy Shields all did, Robbie Sandrock all did very well, you know, individually, but we just didn't really gel as a team this season, and we chopped and changed a lot trying to find that chemistry that we thought we were going to have because we signed so many of last season's roster up. You know, we were cock-a-hoop this time, you know, not this time last year, but in the off-season last year when we were signing up the similar players that would have instant chemistry, guys. We're going to hit the ground running, and that was a big advantage to us the previous season when we ran roughshod over everyone in the league. We thought that was going to happen, and for whatever reason, it just didn't happen. And there'd be players that in that roster will look at themselves and think they didn't have good seasons, and if they come back to Belfast, they'll be wanting to prove if they move on to retirement, whatever. It'll be a it'll be a sad book end of their career. But, you know, there's players that we know, we're in a slightly privileged position. We know there's players there that have carried injuries for a long time this season and played with injuries that, you know, footballers wouldn't have played on with. You know, these guys are warriors. They've done their very best for the Belfast Giants this season. Positives to take from the season, the likes of Boomerang Corner, filling up barnyards week in, week out, and getting that game night presentation going after a few months, got it really up and running. And there are positives to take from the season. Yeah, it's been a bust on the ice. There's no getting over that. But, you know, we can't change that now. We can critique it to the, we can critique it to death. But, you know, it's the Belfast Giants 2014-15 is done with now. I'd like to think that going forward, we rebuild and you know, come back fighting.
From my point of view, well, obviously you two gents have summed it up very well. I think we've had so many, quite a few negatives this year, but quite a few, well, some positives to take from it as well. We look at the trip into Europe, we look at how strong that was. And yeah, some people point the fact that we got to where we were due to other teams pulling out, but the Giants still had to go and win games, and out there they did win games. They didn't get to the final based on a technicality in goals scored. You know, but you've got to take your chances, and the Giants went out there and took as many as they could. It's disappointing. We have a high standard as regards to being fans of the Belfast Giants. When you look across the league, I think I've said this before, and you take the average of every team in the Elite League and their league position and where they finish the league, the Giants come out on top. They've always been near the top. They've always fought near the top. When the Sheffield Steelers were fighting for the title, the Belfast Giants were right there with them. When the Coventry Blaze were winning titles, the Belfast Giants were fighting for that title with them. When the Nottingham Panthers came and did it, the Belfast Giants were still there. Teams have come and gone, and the Belfast Giants have still been there. And no doubt, the Belfast Giants will be back up there come next season and seasons to come, because this organisation doesn't stand for failure. The fans don't stand for failure. None of us do. We've all hurt this season at the fact that the Belfast Giants didn't perform to the high levels that we've enjoyed, the high levels we've come to. I hate to say expect. Nobody deserves to win anything. You work hard to win things, and you work, and when you don't win things, you work even harder to win them again. And I look at the organisation as they are, and, you know, they've been very good to us here at View from the Bridge as regards to the access we've been given. And in saying that, you can see the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes, and you can see the actual hurt amongst the people involved, the players, the coaching staff, the Odyssey Trust. You can see how hard they are working, because they want the team to be up there again. The players want the team to be up there again, the coaching staff and the fans most of all. And I've no doubt at all that we will be up there again. I'll look back on this season with a great deal of disappointment. There's no doubt about that. But I just think it was a blip.
Well, at the end of the day, Paddy, you know, 15 seasons. It's the end of our 15th season. We've got 11 trophies in the bag. We're a successful club. We'll be back.
Hear, hear. Two bits of any other business. First of all, I want to give a big thank you to everybody who turned up at Bunkers. I think I was there. Everybody turned out at Bunkers for A View from the Bridge with the Cat's Whiskers live on stage. Davey came up and chatted. Shawnee Phillips came and chatted. Ray Monaghan. We had Daryl Hammond. And of course, TV's Neil Russell. TV's Aaron Murphy. TV's Paul Eddy. And Todd Kelman as well. It was very enjoyable, guys. And thanks for everybody who came out and helped out with that. And one final note, before I just to say, is that we've come to the end of another season of View from the Bridge, and I want to thank both you gentlemen for joining us on this show. It's always a pleasure to come and talk hockey. I want to also give a thank you to our good friend Mark Hitchcock, who stepped in while I went gallivanting for a month and went skiing for a week. He came and did an absolutely fantastic job. And when times are good, this is a very easy job to do. It's a very easy team to talk about. But when times are difficult, it gets a hell of a lot more difficult, and people gain a lot more. You polarize. People's opinions are polarized. You get people who agree with you and people who disagree with you. It's all about the conversation, and I enjoy, as you know, chatting to you guys about hockey and chatting with everybody about hockey. But nevertheless, this is always a very fun thing to do, and it's a pleasure to do it with you both.
Paddy, I echo everything that you say there, and I think you hit the nail on the head with regards to, you know, the fact that during the good times it's so easy. I mean, everybody, the fan base are all best mates with each other. You know, these podcasts, I think it was actually our good friend Craig Summerton mentioned it on numerous occasions last year. Another happy, clappy AVF TB. I mean, because it was just so easy last season. We were brilliant, even in defeat towards the end of last season, you know, that playoff final, what have you. I mean, we could draw positives from that because we had no Craig Peacock, no Adam Keefe, and we still took the Sheffield Steelers to overtime, heartbreak and what have you. Yes, it was disappointing, but we drew strong positives from it. The fan base were still very much united. This season has been a very different matter, and we will, I sincerely hope that everything will be, the wrongs that were made will be put right this summer and even in the next season. I have no doubt about that. We are a club that have incredibly high expectations. But to touch on your point about, you know, when times are difficult, you're 100% right as well, because everybody will have their own opinions. And sometimes when you raise your head, when you're in our position where we're doing podcasts and we're interviewing players and coaches and management, all this type of stuff, fans have to appreciate. I know we copped a bit of stick this season at various different junctures for maybe a bit of happy clap and things like that. It is a difficult position, I suppose, that we're in, and opinions do polarise. I mean, sometimes, like this season, the three of us have agreed on plenty of things. We've disagreed on plenty of things as well. And that has spread itself out amongst the fan base, because the fans are going to be exactly the same. Some fans are going to be so critical of certain things, demand certain things as well. But that's what sport is all about. Everyone will have an opinion. And it's so much easier whenever times are good. But it has been a difficult season. Well, we've said it. We know it. But we'll park it. We'll throw it away. Let's remember it in terms of, we ain't going to let that happen again. We're going to put these wrongs right and move forward. Steve Thornton, it'd be interesting to see what Steve does next year. Does he move up top? Does he stay on as coach? Is he going to sign the team? It's going to be a lot of interesting things over the course of the summer. I'm really excited already about next season, what type of team we're going to have. I think it'll be younger. I think it'll be faster. I think we'll have a sniper or two in there. I think we'll have more of a physical presence on the back end. Big question mark, as Davey said, over the net-minding position. Really exciting times coming up here as a Belfast Giants fan. And here's hoping we put together a top, top team for next year.
Davey, any final remarks?
Yeah, just it's been fun again. You know, that's two full seasons now, I think, we've gone through without missing a single week. And I think before that, a view from the bridge was a bit hit and miss as to whether you'd get one every few months. And, you know, we enjoy doing it. And, you know, when people are criticising us, we have to take that on the chin as well. You know, we're here trying to produce something for fans just like ourselves, because that's what we are. We're fans of this club. And, like, going forward, there's a lot of exciting stuff going to be happening next season. The NCAA tournament, another big feather in the Belfast Giants cap to be announced tomorrow morning. I see on Twitter there tonight somebody from Boston saying that Marty Walsh is going to be announcing that in the morning. And that's, you know, massive for our club. We are the standard bearers for the Elite League, pushing the Elite League name across the world. Don't be fooled by people like Gary Moran, who'll tell you that the Panthers are the big ticket in town. The Belfast Giants are still the number one club in this Elite League, and we will be back, my friends.
Hear, hear. On that note, I'll conclude this podcast, which is basically just three mates talking hockey, by saying thanks to you both, gents. A 5 months of off-season have just begun, so we'll have a few shows in the off-season, and then we'll be ready to start this all again on the 5th of September.
Paddy, before you go, I would have to be very, very remiss if at least myself or coach didn't say thank you on behalf of all the fans for what you do for this show. You know, you'll be going away here now to edit this. I did it for a few months when you were away gallivanting, as you say. It ain't an easy gig. And, you know, I think everyone out there appreciates everything you do for this club and for the View from the Bridge.
Hear, hear.
Well, thanks for that, mate. It is a team effort, because I know you guys put in a lot of effort with regards to the interviews and everything about that, and then coming on and talking about this. So I think it's a bit of a pat on the back all around. It's something we enjoy doing. And I'll just have to catch you next time.
Cheers, Paddy.
Bye.
Cheers, David.
Bye, Neil.
Thanks to Davey and the coach, not just for their time tonight, but for their time all the way through the season. Thanks to Craig Somerton a very happy man after that playoff final win. But thanks to him for coming on and chatting us about it. A lot of people to thank, actually. Just there'll be a lot of people this whole season of A View from the Bridge have come on, be it players of the Belfast Giants, staff of the Belfast Giants, coaching right across the league, players right across the league, friends, fans, everything. Thanks to Mark Brooks of the Belfast Giants, who week in, week out, we get a text message from saying, do you guys want to hear an interview from one of the boys this week or whatever? He's always there, always very supportive, putting the stuff up, and the Giants overall supportive of what we do. But listen, main thanks go to you guys for listening in. If you guys didn't listen in, it would just be three lads talking to each other on a Tuesday night. And listen, if you're interacting with us on Twitter, on Facebook, coming up to us in the bar, if you've come to one of the live events, which have been a lot of fun, some of them very cathartic this season, it's all done for you guys, because we're just three Belfast Giants fans in our bedrooms talking about the team that we, just as you, love, and it gives us great pleasure in doing that. But thanks for all the support that you guys have been giving us all season long. It's going to be a very long off season, as I said, 5 months of it to go. It's been very entertaining. Even if I did get a month off, and I better say thanks to Hitchy for that, shouldn't I? For stepping in when I took that month off on my honeymoon. And of course, finally, we're going to have to give thanks to my wife, Joanna, to Catherine, David's significant other, and to Hannah, who have to put up with the three of us disappearing every Tuesday night to talk about the hockey. We sort of disappear at about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and we don't resurface again for a couple of hours. And they've been very tolerant about that, and thanks to them. Listen, it's a very long off season, and whatever you're doing with your summer, I really hope you enjoy it. We'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge.